then I said that you should think about and pray about where you feel social work should be in the church. Should it be kind of on the outside? Should it be part of the church? Or where should it be? Because social work in the church has been tossed around like nothing else in the church. I think we've accepted Christian education in the church. So we build colleges and seminaries and so forth. We accept that. We accept mission work in the church, foreign mission. We think that we have to go into foreign countries and Christianize foreign countries, and this is fine. We accept that. We accept home mission work in the church, where we go out and establish new congregations and try and get other people within the role of the church. We accept these things very much. We accept women's work in the church. I sometimes think that the church wouldn't be able to function without the women of the church, because the women's work in the church has always been tremendously important. So
somebody said that the church is manned by women.
Somebody said that? Yeah. Well, I think this is true. But now you see where some of our seminaries have taken women in to train for the ministry, then you get sort of a little hands-off thing. Well, we want women in the church, but not in that spot, something. Okay. So then we have some feeling there. But as a general rule, the church has always accepted women's work in the church. We've accepted work amongst the young people in the church. But when it comes to this thing of social work or social ministry, some people think that's too secular to be within the role of the church. So it's been sort of relegated to the last place. I remember when I came to California as the director of that particular agency, there was nothing there. I was it. But as this thing started to grow, the first 2-3 years, I had an awful time getting even any little tiny little report in any district periodical of the church, because it wasn't too important apparently. But as it started growing and as the congregation started supporting it more and more and as our staff grew, then some of them got a little excited. They thought that we were taking too much money away from the church, see, that money was coming into social work where it should be used someplace else. Well, then when they see that the lay people and pastors become interested in this kind of work, then the church will learn to accept it. Now, the biggest agency that we have within the Lutheran Church today is in Minnesota, of course. Luther Gerdy is executive director. He has about 400 people on the staff, and they have a budget of over $3 million. Now, that's a big operation. That's bigger than the whole American Lutheran Church, budget-wise. So, of course, in Minnesota, the ALC, the LCA, the LCMS, Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, think that that agency is just wonderful, because of the bigness of it, and that it wields a great influence, no question about that. Well, how do you feel? Now, before I go into what I want to go into today, which is perhaps some might be interested in preparing for this thing of social work in the church, and I just want to go into that a little bit. But before I do that, how do you people feel about where social work should be in the church? Should it be an important part of the church? Shouldn't it even be in the church? Should we let the counties and the state welfare program take care of everything? Or should the church be in here at all? How do you feel?
I think it should be in the church.
You think it should be in the church?
The Mormons are doing a good job with the social work in the church.
You bet they are. You bet they are.
Good. It's like an extension of Christ's ministry. He wasn't just talking to people about God and faith and things like that. Yeah. Ministry.
An extension of his
social
ministry.
Social work. Fed people and healed people.
In other words, he did more than just preach.
Yeah.
I think it's hard for some people to understand that people should get paid for doing that type of work too. And I think the volunteer Christian, well, you should just do that. And
yeah.
And that's hard for some people to understand.
I think, Sherm, you hit on something there. Because some of the most well-paid people in communities today are your state and your welfare people. They're highly paid, highly paid people. And so for the church to compete, even with salaries, you see, that takes a lot of money. And so here the idea comes out that we should volunteer our services, you know, and do this work because we're Christian. So there you get another sort of dichotomy where the sometimes people feel it's taking too much money, see. I know when we were resettling refugees from overseas in Northern California, I figured it out as far as our budget was concerned, and ours was low compared to other places in America where they're resettling. But it cost us about $6,000 to resettle one person. And it cost up to $15,000 in some areas to resettle one person from, say, Latvia or Budapest or Hungary or someplace like that. So we put a price label sometimes on salvation, see? Which it really is, isn't it? Because this is work that the Lord asked us to do, and then we put a dollar sign on it. Like you've heard the old cliche where the guy says, the church is costing too much money. Didn't you know salvation was free? This is what Christ said. And so the answer is this. Yeah, water's free too, but we have to pay to get it piped into our house. See, this is the thing. Okay, any other feeling on this?
If it comes from within the church, then are you saying that it should be entirely church endowed? Or is it something that could receive money from states, federal government, or the like? How about that?
Thank you for bringing that, Alice. The social work in the church is wanted by both county and state because they're overloaded, and anything that the church can do, they want us to do it. And they will go so far as if you get professional social workers on your staff. Say you have social workers with his or her MS degree, their master's degree in social work, or you get chaplaincy work with chaplains who have clinical training and get them on your staff, the county and the state will give us money to do the work in our area where they can't cover it all. Now, that's right.
Is that true in every area?
Most every area now. It wasn't to begin with. But this first came into the Midwest in Minnesota, Iowa, and the Dakotas. I would say Wisconsin too.
Well, I'm from Minnesota, and I've noticed problems arising from church-affiliated groups getting state money.
Yeah. There's problems if you say delve into their area, but if you take what's left over, say they got if they have 10 social workers on their staff, and they got enough clientele so that they really should have. Say 15 social workers, then they will help the church agency pay for those extra 5. If that church agency is willing to take any case that comes, whether they are Lutheran or Nazi. In social work, you cannot segregate this thing and say, well, now we're a Lutheran agency, so we just minister to Lutherans. That you can't do. No, if you get that kind of money, you minister to everybody. And of course, that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
whether you get any money or not. Mm-hmm. We never got any money out here from anybody, only the church. But we ministered to everybody, and I suppose most of our ministry, probably 60% of it, went to people outside the Lutheran faith. Well, we're pretty much agreed then that this should be within the church. But even though there's some problems. Yeah.
I think there has to be a proper balance between the gospel and the social work too. Sometimes the social work becomes so prominent that the gospel is subdued a little.
Yeah.
There's more people I think interested in the social work in some churches than they are in the gospel.
I think social work is part of the gospel.
I know, but sometimes it's overbalanced, I think.
It's the gospel in action.
How do you define the gospel?
Well, I suppose the attitude of the church, too. People are being converted, that's fine. People are being helped spiritually.
So we talked about this some yesterday, that as a director of an agency, that's one of the hardest things to do, is to keep this even keel between gospel and work, as you say, or works. You constantly have to, with your staff particularly, because they're pressured from every area, particularly when they serve non-church people. They think, well, being this is a church agency, well, I'm not interested in the gospel, but I'm supposed to get some service, I'll have to listen to the gospel, see. That sort of a thing. But as a church agency, a Christian agency, you have to make it clear as crystal that the gospel is on a par with the social work you're doing because it's Christian. So it's a constant thing. But like you say, it can be overbalanced once in a while, depending on your leadership, of course. What's that?
Can it go the other way then, from the gospel and the social group?
Oh yeah, I think so. Especially if you get non-trained staff. Now, I know people kind of screw up their nose once in a while, you know, at me when I say, well, they apply for a job. And so the first thing I say, well, now you want to do social work. What degree do you have in social work? Well, I just want to do good work. See, I just want to put my faith into action. Well, I says, I'm sorry, but you have to have your degree in this particular agency because of the state and church relationship. Because they will not recognize any of your work unless you have good trained workers. And I believe that in the church, we can have a better social work program than any county or any state because we got this plus of Christianity. Where in the county and the state, sure, there are some Christian social workers there. But as an agency, they do not foster that sort of a thing. So I know I've had social workers come to me who say, well, we'd like to work in a church agency because we cannot exercise our faith the way we would like to, where we're working now. And of course, we in the Lutheran Church, we always brag about the fact that we have an educated clergy, we have an educated clientele in the church that we work with. We give our pastors time off so they can go further study and so forth. Well, we better go all the way then, and have the best trained people we can get. Because even with the best trained people, there's lots of mistakes you make as you work with people, no matter what kind of training you have. I've had lots of training, but boy, sometimes all that training goes out the door when I run into some problems. You can pull all the stops and nothing happens. That you don't think it does anyway. Maybe you're just planting the seed, and maybe 10 years from now it'll be reaped. I don't know.
When I brought that up, I had in mind the proper balance.
Yeah.
Now, to digress just a little.
Sure.
When you get back home to your own churches, find out what percentage of your general income is devoted to missions. I made a tabulation of 13. I happen to belong to the Covenant denomination. I'm not Lutheran.
Mm-hmm.
So I made a tabulation of 10 of our churches and got the percentage of giving to missions. I don't think there's any, the church here, the fullness of God in Holden, gives 50% of their income.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maybe there was one church in our denomination that gave 50% of the 10 that I have, and some gave 17%, some less than that, I think, some maybe 24%. But 50%, missions suffer.
50% is quite unusual.
Very unusual.
Of course, at the seminary, we were taught when we left the seminary that what we should ideally try for in any congregation we served was this 50% home and 50% giveaway. I don't know if any of us ever reached it, but we strive for it.
I guess I'm still having some difficulty with talking about social work and gospel, or even when you bring up missions, I'm assuming that you're saying that's gospel.
Well,
I'm not sure what your example was, but I just...
Yes, I would say that.
Yeah, okay, I guess I'm just uncomfortable with that type of distinction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like gospel is not social work, or social work is not gospel. Or, you know, what is gospel then?
Yes, but preaching.
Well, okay, preaching. You mean the talking and the doing.
Well, that and
so gospel is talking and social work is doing.
No, not exactly, no.
Okay, then that's what
there's I'm gospel and social. There should be gospel and social work.
Yeah.
Well, I think where you are having trouble here, and I think all of us have trouble in this area, where mission, gospel, social mission work. Now, we have several kinds of mission work. Like I mentioned, home mission, foreign mission. And that home mission can be two different kinds, too. One's establishing just churches, building churches to get people to come in. Others can be an evangelistic mission, where you go out and gather people to not only come to church, but to come to a commitment to Christ. Then foreign mission is where you bring the gospel, we say, to a heathen people. That's just bringing the gospel in by word of mouth. And that went on for years until we finally came to the conclusion maybe we should do something else, but just bring the gospel, but live the gospel. Help them, how to cultivate their land. How to irrigate their land, things like this. That can all be done in the name of Christ too, you know. And that's mission work.
Mm-hmm.
And then social mission work is dealing with the deep-seated problems of people, their psyche, if you please, their emotional problems. You get right into the heart of a person when you start dealing with their social problems. And that's mission. So all of it is mission. And all of it is gospel. But we make these separations in order, I suppose, for church structure, maybe. But it's all the same. But you
I think the fact that people make those distinctions for whatever purpose is probably part of the problem.
Of course it
you
is.
You know, in people accepting, you know, your social work.
Well, if we'd run the church like Christ wanted us to run it, we'd have no problem. But you see, man has to stick his fingers in, and that's where we get problems. The Lord himself never started synods or division of the church at all. That's all man-made. Christ's prayer to his Father was that we would be one as he and his Father are one. That's the idea. But I don't know where that's done. We get so many splits and divisions. We've heard here several times about the fights even in the early church, how that came about. Wherever you have human beings and differences of opinion, you have argumentation, you have fights, you have splits and all this. This is the sin of man that does this. Ideally, Christ didn't want it that way. Well, let's go on here. I think this, what I want to start off with today is this gospel in action. I think we can label it that, or our faith in action. And I don't know of any place that this says it better in Scripture than in Matthew 25, where the Lord speaks about the final judgment. The final judgment. And I'm going to take time today to just read this so we get it again fresh in our mind. From the 31st verse. But when the Son of Man comes in His glory with all His angels with Him, then He will take His seat on His glorious throne. By the way, I'm reading from Philip's translation. All the nations will be assembled before Him, and He will separate people from each other like a shepherd separates a sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on the right hand and the goats on the left. Then the King will say to those on His right hand, Come, you who have won My Father's blessing, take your inheritance, the kingdom reserved for you since the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, you gave Me food. I was thirsty, you gave Me drink. I was lonely, you made Me welcome. I was naked, you clothed Me. I was sick, you looked after Me. I was in prison, and you came to see Me there. Then the believer will answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and give you food, thirsty and give you drink, lonely and make you welcome, or naked and clothe you, or ill or in prison and came unto you? And the King will reply to them, I assure you that whatever you did for the humblest of My brothers, you did it for Me. Then He will say to those on the left, Out of My presence, cursed are you into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was hungry, you gave Me nothing to eat. I was thirsty, you gave Me nothing to drink. I was lonely, you never made Me welcome. I was naked, you did not clothe Me. I was sick and in prison, and you never cared about Me. Then they too will answer Him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and thirsty and so forth? Notice, even on the final judgment, people are going to try to make an excuse. Notice that? Here, just before they're condemned to hell, they're going to say, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty or naked or sick or in prison and didn't minister? And He will say, I assure you that whatever you fail to do to the humblest of My brothers, you fail to do it to Me. And these will go off to eternal punishment, but the righteous to life eternal. I think this is the best picture there is in Holy Scripture on Christian social working. And what I get from this text is not an either or. It's a must, because the Lord has said so. It's a commitment to Him. Now, on this text, I could base the whole gamut of Christian social work, the whole thing. And I'm going to name some of the areas today in which the church is serving in Christian social work and where we perhaps should be serving. For instance, some agencies serve in child adoption, where there are hundreds and hundreds of babies born that nobody wants. So agencies get these children, and then they place them for adoption. And so there are hundreds of children placed into Christian homes through a child family service, we say. Another area in which our agencies serve is in the family welfare program. Now, what's that? This is trying to keep husband and wife and children as a family unit. Now, that's a tough one. You know, when a person comes to me, or say a couple comes to me, or if they come with their children and they have family problems, I always tell them this little thing, and I think it makes them feel a little bit more at ease. I says, here, John, you loved Mary, and you thought that Mary would be a good wife for you, so you two got together and you got married. Then, in due time, You got little Johnny, you got Emily, you got all the rest of these children, 3 or 4 of them. Now you're all still individual. It's a miracle that you and Mary get along together under one roof. But then when you get 5 children and husband and wife and mother and father, you're 7 different people then, living together under the same roof, and we call this a family. It's only a miracle that people can live for many years like that in a family setting and get along somehow, you know. Because we're distinct individuals. The only thing I can see that we do get along is because love is in the midst. Christian love. So when I tell couples and families, it kind of relaxes them a little bit. Because I say, you're not alone in this. There are hundreds of families like this. But let's start with your problem now. And then we go on from there. This is what we call family casework service. And there are so many problems like this that all the social workers and county agencies, state agencies, Lutheran agencies, any agency could never begin to touch all these families. It's impossible. Just too many. Another branch of Christian service is the chaplaincy work. Now, when I came to California, there were some that kind of lifted their eyebrows on this thing that I wanted to start chaplaincy work with specially clinically trained pastors, chaplains, in hospitals that weren't Lutheran. And I had quite a time with this. The church didn't look very favorably on this. Going into a hospital that isn't Lutheran? Yeah, I says, to minister to people. Well, how many Lutherans are in that hospital? I said, I don't care if there's any Lutherans there. There are people there. I said, I don't care if they even belong to a church. That doesn't make any difference. Well, I had quite a time with this. I had to work almost a year before I got my first chaplain. And then we started in one hospital in Berkeley. And we ended up with 9 chaplains serving in 15 institutions. And now, of course, chaplaincy is all over America. Serving in Lutheran hospitals and other hospitals. The 2 I was interested in getting in was the one in the East Bay and then the UC Medical Center in San Francisco, which is the Mayo Clinic of the West Coast. And the only reason I got in there, I think, was because I had such a wonderful relationship with the top administrator. He had 5 assistants. Harold Hickson was his name. And I've often thought of this. It's not what you know, but who you know that counts. And I certainly found this out here, because Harold was not a Christian man. But after we got together for months, Harold said, you know, I feel that we should have this in the UC Medical Center, but it has to go through the Board of Regents of the University of California. Well, they got 8 campuses, and all these guys, you know. So I said, okay, what's the next move? He says, I think the next move is me. I said, what do you mean? Well, he said, you remember months ago when you asked me, after you met me the first time, Mr. Hickson, what church do you belong to? He says, I kind of fudged on you. He says, I finally told you I didn't belong to any church. I hadn't really been interested. Now, he says, I've come to the point where I'd like to have chaplains in the hospital, and if I do, I better turn to Christ myself, because that's where it starts. And you know, we had a wonderful time, Harold Hickson and I, and in front of his Board of Regents of the whole university setting, you should have heard the confession of this man, recommending Christian chaplaincy work in a university setting. To me, this was a miracle. I never dreamt I could get in the university. But we've had a chaplain there now for 14 years. He's trained 200 other chaplains in that university setting. And the university is wide open. Has been for about the last 10 years. Well, this is what can happen when you go in the name of Christ and are not ashamed to confess it. This is what you want. It's not you that does it, of course, but Christ uses you in a miraculous way to get this job done. And this is what happened. Well, this chaplaincy work as I say, now is in a lot of hospitals. And the good that this has done. I could speak for 5 hours and just chaplaincy experiences. For a chaplain who specifically trained on how to deal with people who are lying there facing death with terminal cancer, who have no conception of the Christian faith, nothing whatsoever. They've never been inside of a church, never read a Bible, and they're facing death. Well, a guy has to be pretty wise as a serpent and very, very loving and kind, and the Holy Spirit has to do an awful lot of work in a case like that. But this is where our chaplains have got to be trained specifically in this life, because they're dealing with death constantly. We have one chaplain who does nothing else but work on the cancer ward at the UC Medical Center in San Francisco. From early morning to late at night, I couldn't do it. I don't think I could face death like that all day long. A day after day after day, with the families and all that. But here he carries on. He's doing a wonderful job. Well, these are specially trained people to do this. And I'm glad now that we are getting some women in our seminary. Because here maybe I'm a kind of a rebel too, because I have always felt that women chaplains can do a lot of good work in these hospitals that a man could never touch. Never. And I've talked to our seminary down in the Bay. In fact, we have 5 of them down there. And I've talked to the students of seminary, saying how happy I am for this. And I hope some of you girls who are going to school here will turn out to be chaplains ministering to people in hospitals. Not only who are sick physically, but emotionally. Here I've seen some miracles happen that's just been wonderful. Where people have just laid down in bed, they're going to die, but there's nothing physically wrong with them, not a thing. But they decided they don't want to live anymore, for one reason or other, and they just lie there, terrible emotionally sick. Some call it mental sickness. I don't care what you call it, they're sick. They're as sick as if you had a malignancy that you'd die tomorrow. They're that sick. Now, to deal with this kind of a person, you have to be specially trained too. So the chaplaincy work is doing a great job in all these hospitals. Then another thing that the chaplains do is that they run seminars for parish pastors in the area in which they serve. So pastors serving in these congregations can come in and take some training from these men who are particularly trained in this line, how to deal with this kind of a thing when it comes to their people in the congregation they serve. I'm sorry to say this, but some of we pastors, you know, we read a book on psychology and we think we're psychiatrists. And we're not. We are pastors, we're preachers. And we better keep it that way. The counseling that we do is in the spiritual realm. When I get to a person where I see that they have emotional problems, I don't touch it. I know a lot of people to whom to send them. But I don't touch it myself because I'm not trained to do that. Yeah.
Are your chaplains all ministers, priests, pastors?
Yeah, they have to graduate from the seminary. Now they have to graduate. Many of them just graduate from seminary and go right into clinical training without being a pastor in a parish. Many of them do that. But the requirement nationally is that they have to graduate from some seminary. And then they go into clinical training, which can be for a year or 2 years, depending on if you want to be a supervisor. If you want to be a supervisor to train other people, then you go 2 years.
Why do you have to graduate from a seminary?
What's that?
Why do you have to graduate from a seminary?
Well, now you ask the $64 question. I'm not in that administrative structure, but this is the way the church has set it up. Whether, and this is not only the Lutheran Church. This includes even the Roman Catholic Church. And but that's interesting. The Roman Catholic Church is tremendous chaplaincy work now. And some of our men down in the Bay Area have trained Roman priests to be chaplains. Mm-hmm. And this is great. But every seminary has it, whether it's Roman Catholic or Reformed or Lutheran. This is the way the church is set up. And I suppose the reason for it is because it's such an intricate business. Now, if for instance, I need an operation on my ox, a very delicate operation, one where they had to go in and cut a little nerve or something. Well, I wouldn't want some guy who was an intern in a foot or something like that to be monkeying with my eye. This is the kind of a thing. We have a lot of well-meaning people whose heart says, I want to do this, but they don't know how to do it.
Yeah, but I was just thinking that from the way that the seminaries are now, a lot of that seminary thing could then go to waste. I mean, I'm not sure, but I think that if a person was specifically interested in clinical, you know, hospital chaplaincy, to spend 4 years studying Greek and Hebrew and the Old Testament is not, I mean, I agree that can help you in your ministry, but that wouldn't be like wanting, you know, I mean, that you know, this eye, this foot, eye type of thing would not apply there. Because if you wanted to be an eye specialist and that was it, you know, then there would be no reason for you to have to study the foot.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
I'd have to disagree with that because I think there's an element of maturity. I think there's an element of maturity that's involved in every job like that. And I think that's the answer for age. Becomes a big factor. And I think if I were gone to seminary and come straight through the clinical training and being administering some internal cancer at age 25, that I don't think that I could be much better if 5 ways and a little bit older. But I think that's a case of maturity and age comes a real benefit. And the experience of just talking to educated people on being in that academic ground is of real assistance to you in that. Mm-hmm. I find that maturity is a big factor in it. And the experience trying to think.
Yeah, we're living in a society now that demands almost that you not only have a high school education, but you have a college education. And if you want to be in the ministry or in any part of the church, you've got to have a seminary education. Now, I'll grant that there are courses that you take even in college that you say, well, I'm never going to use it. But you have to take it. It's a required subject. Well, maybe that's what we call it, liberal arts, because it makes you well-rounded. Well-rounded and firm, like the old cigarette ad used to say, you know. We need a smattering of a lot of things in order to not center too much in one thing. And of course, this experience and age factor, I suppose, has something to do with it. But that's the way it's set up, and I don't see that we're going to change this.
The point that I'm trying to make is that you're going to lose a lot of people who would want to have the hospital work but don't want to go to seminary. And I think that if there was some private program that then maybe there could be chaplains under the chaplain, something like that. But I think you're going to lose, I mean, if that is a real need, or a real, you know, ministry that is needed, that I think that some people, it would be hard for them to go through a whole seminary.
What you're saying is probably something like nurses' aides, where nurses have to get their RN, but nurses' aides don't have to. They just help the nurses. Something
well,
like that?
I don't know. I mean, that's just a thought off the top of
that. Yeah. Well, how long somebody would want to be under somebody else, you know, that's another thing. Because here you get personality conflicts and all that. Because again, we're human beings. But I believe in education. I believe thoroughly in education. In fact, so much so that when I retired at 65 from this agency where I served for 25 years, you know what I did, first of all? I wrote Al Rudnitz at the seminary in Luther at St. Paul, where I graduated from, and I said, Al, I'd like to come back to seminary for a quarter and be a student with your senior class. And he wrote, and then I said, how much is this going to cost me? And he wrote back and he said, would you say that again? Call me and let me know. So I called Al Toke. He said, I couldn't believe my eyes. And I couldn't believe my ears when I hear you now. Because he says, you're the first pastor that's ever asked to come back to be with a senior class to take all their courses for a quarter or half a year training. And he says, it just isn't done. Now, this is what I did when I retired. So you can see I thoroughly believe in education. I went back to seminary and I worked harder those 3 months than I ever did. And I was with all these young guys 30 years younger than myself. And boy, that was tough to go to school then. But I did. And I went to school for a quarter, then I went to Holy Land, and then I went back to work again, see, on a part-time basis. But I believe in education. I think all the education we can get today in order to keep up with this technological world we're living in, boy, we better get all the education we can. And the more Christian education you can get, of course, that's the plus. Okay, well, let's go into some of these others. We aren't going to solve all the problems here. Resettlement is another part of social work. Now, what's resettlement? This is taking people from other countries and resettling them in homes and jobs in America. Now, what's that?
We just put 22 people in four churches, my home church.
Is that right?
Yeah, the Vietnamese.
Vietnamese? Mm-hmm. So, by the way, you know that Ted Olson here, who's a guest here, he has two Vietnamese homes. Korean. Yeah. And the amazing thing, Luther Gerdy, who's the executive of Minnesota Agency, he got one of these through the Minnesota Agency, so he knew Luther. That's kind of interesting. Because I know Luther and Sophia, his wife, once a year they go to Korea, and they bring back with them a bunch of babies. Last year they brought back 25 babies. They got a sort of a thing going there. But this of course, is the adoption field again. So we bring children from other countries to be adopted to our people here in America. But this resettlement is another thing. These are refugees that have been displaced because of war conditions. And, of course, there are hundreds and thousands of them all over the world now. But after the Second World War, we got into it. And we in Northern California, we resettled 6,000 of these people. In the Minnesota Agency, I suppose they resettled many, many more. But they were resettling all over America. Now, of course, we have the Vietnamese, and our agency is involved in that. When I left the agency, we were involved with the Chinese. The Chinese who had fled Red China, who landed in Hong Kong, in the freedom of Hong Kong, and we got them from Hong Kong. And tomorrow, I'm going to give you some definite illustrations of people that we've resettled. And kind of get you excited about this, because I think this is one of the greatest fields of Christian service to get into that you can get into in the church. And I'm not recruiting here, but I'm just saying this out of my own experience. So the whole field of resettlement, that's the big one. Then we also deal with the handicapped, and you know what handicapped people are. For instance, in Faribault, Minnesota, we have a whole school for the deaf and the mute. We have a school for the blind. We have a whole braille system set up. And then we have a school in another section of the country for handicapped people. And this is all in the social ministry field. So you see, you have to have special training to know how to deal with these kind of people. Because it's not an easy job, it's a tough job. Then, of course, we deal in another area, and that's with the aging. And tomorrow I'm bringing a tape along with me, and it's entitled, How to Live with Your Wrinkles. How to Live with Your Wrinkles. I think you'll enjoy it. And this is dealing with aging people. And like I've always said, every one of us are aging. When I talk to Sunday school children, I say, we're all aging. There's no one like an aged person. No one. But there are a lot of aging persons. From the time you're born, you begin aging. Every one of us are aging. Some of us are older than others, but we're all aging. And so in the church, in social ministry, we deal with the aging. Now that can be any age. But primarily here we think of homes for the aging, and I got a hang up on that too. Because I personally feel that any older person who can take care of themselves and wants to take care of themselves should never be in a home for the aging. Never. And I have a hang up on that, because we have some beautiful homes for the aging, you know, where they take care of every want you got. Maybe I'm too independent for that. I like to take care of this guy as long as I can. And I've seen people who are aging, as soon as they get placed in a home where everything is done for them, you know, they give up. They kind of wither away. Pretty soon they're dead. I have a mother-in-law who's 98 years old. She's quite a gal. She has arthritis. She can't see, only out of the corner of her eye a little bit. She can't hear very much. She only walks with a walker, and that stumbles along with that. But she's got really a sense of humor. Her great-grandson calls her from Minneapolis, and she lives out in Yuba City, California, and he says, well, Grandma, how are you getting along? Oh, she says, I'm fine. She says, of course, I can't see, and I can't hear, and I can't walk, but outside that, I'm fine. Yeah, see? But now she's still living in her own home. We have a lady that lives there with her who prepares her meals for her and helps her, but otherwise she takes care of herself. Very independent. Now, Mother World would have died years ago if we'd put her in a home for the aged. But she's taking care of herself. And so we in the church, we serve the aging person as best we can. Then another area is daycare centers. You've probably seen them in certain cities where we have daycare centers. And the Lutheran Church and Lutheran Social Service, that's also part of their work. Then one that maybe some of you will be interested in is overseas assignments. So we have overseas assignments in all these fields, in most every country in the world, where the Lutheran Church is doing any work. So this is what our agencies do, and it all fits in with Matthew 25, doesn't it? Another area which I just mentioned in the hospital as far as chaplains is concerned, but we deal in prison work too as far as that chaplains. And that's another whole thing I'd like to speak for an hour on, just what we do with prisoners. And it's kind of thrilling, you know. I was assigned, I'd taken a little of this chaplaincy service, and I was assigned to the island of Alcatraz. You all know where that is, down the Bay Area, where I'd take a boat over, you know. And you get on the island, and boy, there you got some pretty tough people. But, you know, it was interesting to talk to those lifers about a lot of things, why they were there, and what their relationship to people and the Lord really was. And I never had a single one of them get angry with me, not a one. But I had a lot of them cry with me. Well, that's something to see a lifer cry. These tough guys, you know, probably they killed people and everything. But like I tell them, there's forgiveness. There's forgiveness. And when they hear that, you know, something happens. By just saying that word, there's forgiveness. Christ forgives. you know, it just sends shivers up your spine to see the reaction of these guys. Another miracle, another part of Christian social service. And if it wouldn't be for the church, we could never get in these places. So I thank God for my church, and I thank God for Christian social service work. And I suppose somebody asked me yesterday, how come you went into this kind of work from parish ministry? Well, I suppose I can tell you that in closing today. I served two congregations, two large ones. One had 3,800 members, and one had 4,300 members, different times. And you know, I got so tired shaking hands with about 2,500 people every Sunday morning back to the door, and then not seeing them until the next Sunday. Just think of the waste of Christian manpower going out that door. Where I'm sure a lot of them did some sort of Christian service. Well, I probably didn't know about it. But I wanted to get in some kind of work where I could deal with the problems of people, not just preaching, and not just giving communion, not just baptizing and marrying and burying and all that. You're so busy with that. In one of these congregations, there were two we pastored, and we averaged a funeral a week, a funeral a day for 3 years. Two of us, funeral a day. And most of them were outside the church. Well, you try and carry on just that program besides preparing your Sunday service sermon. Well, I told somebody I know a much better way of committing suicide than that. It's tough. And you're just, I know somebody has to do this work, but you're just kind of scraping the surface all the time. And I wanted to get down where the rubber hits the road, you know, with people. And so I suppose that's why I went into Christian social service work, because there I got it. And I was in it for 8 years in Wisconsin, 17 years out here. Okay. Now, some of you may be interested in going into Christian social service work. You might know somebody here who might be interested in this. And I want to say, if there are any of you that are, I'm going to be around here for two more weeks after this. And you can buttonhole me anytime and talk about this, and I can probably give you some direction where to go and get your schooling and all this, where to start, what subjects to take and all this, if you're interested in this sort of a thing. So now, tomorrow, we're going to live with our wrinkles. And then we're going to go into that phase of it. And that's going to be a tape, and I'm sure that's going to cause a lot of discussion after you listen to that 20-minute tape. Mm-hmm. Now, I got 2 minutes to 5, time to go to eat. Thanks for today.